The DCF Experience. Hello and welcome to the Design Podcast brought to you by the DCF Experience. My name is David Fleming and we're very lucky today because we have Sam O'Brien on the show. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hey David, yeah, I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. Thursday, nearly the end of the week. The sun is out, so it's a good day in Canterbury.
Yeah, very mild February, I'd say.
Yes, I know. I was talking to my wife about this yesterday and I said to her, because I wasn't in the UK this time last year, so I said to her, are we now in spring? And she went, no, last March it was 0 degrees and snowed. So I was like, oh, right. I can't start playing golf just yet then.
Yeah.
And where are you at the moment?
I'm in London, so West London.
Ah, nice. How's it up there?
Yeah, we've also got the sun out. It's very nice. Planning to go Wales on the weekend and go up Snowdon, so we'll see how that fares out. But
oh wow,
nice weather.
Have you done it before?
I have, yeah, I've done it once before.
Ah, okay. Are you a bit of a trekker, mountaineer in the spare time?
No, I'm just trying to get a little bit healthier. Trying to get away from the desk and away from all the distractions.
I was gonna say that's like zero to extreme sport in one easy step, rather than just going to the gym and getting on a bike for half an hour. You're like, exactly, I'm gonna go and climb Mount Snowdon.
That's the plan.
Good man. Well, look, for the benefit of our listeners, I'm gonna give just a brief intro on you, and then the podcast today. I'd like to cover a bit about your background because I think it's really important to give some context to our listeners as to, you know, where you came from, what you've been doing and everything else. And then, you know, sort of the two key areas for me today, I'd like to talk a little bit about coaching and mentoring, because obviously you're a senior UX manager at the moment for EMEA. So I think your point of view around how to help junior and budding designers will be very valuable. And then, you know, as I always like to do, you know, this podcast is about design and about the industry. So I really want to get into, you know, what's happening at the moment in the industry, what's potentially going to be disrupting it. So, you know, we'll just flow through all the questions as we go, and hopefully we can be a little bit controversial and diplomatic as we go.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay, so I know that you're obviously senior UX manager for RingCentral. You told me you've got over 10 years experience within design and user experience. And I believe more recently sort of been heading into conversion rate optimization, which I'm really interested to find out about. I know you've been running a team for the last few years, so moved more towards the leadership side of UX. And I think in your previous life, you did a lot of work within a handful of different industries, doing freelance projects, launching and growing new products. But I'll get you to tell us more about this. But I think you've evolved from that sort of traditional print to digital to UX and now into leadership. And I guess that sort of leads me on to my first question, which is always kind of like, just give us a bit of context where you started, you know, why did you get into design? Because I always find that hopefully people who are listening are from the design space. And that for me is always a great place to start because it gives people the context as to, you know, why we're talking. So yeah. I'll put it over to you, as they say.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know if I had a normal start to design.
No.
I reckon from about the age of 10, so my dad's a bricklayer, so I'd say from about the age of 10, I was fascinated with architecture plans, which is slightly strange because I didn't go into being an architect, but yeah, so I used to sit there on the kitchen table and look at these architecture plans and then look at like drawing my own plans, and not just for houses, but for furniture and things like that. So my interest kind of grew from there. I think by the time I hit 16, I was pretty certain I was going to be a designer of some sort. So I just wasn't exactly sure what that meant. Yep. So as most people do, I left school, went to college. I actually just studied art.
Okay.
And got taken under the wing by someone who, you know, offered to give me a little bit of training on more of the graphic design side. So the traditional print graphic design. So that was the start for me, really. I started out in print. Worked in print for a couple of years, and then the natural progression, just as, you know, the market changed and there was more digital work to be done, I moved into digital design. From there, it kind of just so happened that we got a project which was heavily focused around user experience versus purely just design.
Okay.
And we took this project on. It was currently just me and two other designers. and just kind of fell in love with user experience and sort of, I always joke, but I think the main passion for me was that everything I was doing, was there was a reason to it, and I had answers to questions instead of just designing for the sake of design. I was designing with a purpose, and there was a and there was an answer to a question that I was trying to get to. So yeah, did that, and like you say, I then the company I worked for freelance, we focused heavily on the automotive industry, worked on multiple websites for them and different product launches. And then I did a little spell of like in the startup scene and worked with a couple of real early stage startups and trying to launch their products, which unfortunately didn't pan out to be successful, but there you go, trial and error. And yeah, stumbled over to Ring Central. We're a global company, so based out in San Francisco.
Very nice.
And yeah, been there for just over 2 years now. Run a small team of designers, developers, and analysts. So like you say, the work's kind of shifted from more of the UX manager role now. And then, yeah, focusing on the conversion rate optimization, which is funny because people think of it as a much more marketing-led operation. But for me, it's very design-led because every interaction someone has with your website or with your product, the more streamlined that process is and the less areas of, you know, the less restriction along the way, the better the conversion rate's going to be and the more you're going to get them to do what you want them to do. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much where I'm at now. Spend a lot of time still sketching out plans and working on, you know, initial ideas, but also spend a lot of time looking at data and trying to figure out what's actually happening.
Interesting. And I mean, I think that it's quite an interesting one to hear about, obviously, your father and how that had any... how that may have had an impact on your start into design. But any other influences from around that time? You know, were you always a high performer in school in art, or was it just something that you, you know, sort of naturally became good at, or have you always had to work really hard at it?
I mean, I think you definitely have to work hard. I'm not an artist by no means. I think, you know, for me, there was just a passion there. I just... for design, there was, I always had an interest in design. Like I say, I didn't really know what that was going to be or what means it was going to fall into, but I always knew that there was something that I wanted. And I think, like, I'm dyslexic, so being dyslexic, we always tend to lean towards the creative side of the world. So yeah, it just the I think for things which inspired me along the way, definitely, like I say, the architectural plans and looking at things like that, but I used to just find I'd be in a class, you know, studying maths, and we used to have those that gridded paper. And instead of sitting there learning maths, I'd be sitting there sketching out little plans for a new desk that I wanted to build at home or a new something else. So just really, I just found all the way through my adolescence, I was just constantly sketching and designing things without really knowing what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then from your earlier career, would you say that you did a lot more freelance or perm work in those early stages? And did you have any sort of real early successes that you were proud of?
Yeah, so I was taken on pretty much straight out of college. So I volunteered, which is probably my number one bit of advice for everyone is don't be afraid to volunteer.
Yeah.
I volunteered at a company, you know, being a T-boy, so working one or 2 days a week, just basically getting around other designers and, you know, learning what they were doing and how they were working versus what I was being taught in college at the time. So from there, you know, that kind of groomed that into a role. As soon as I left college, I was straight into a design role. And I think, you know, in the early stages, pretty much anything I did, I was proud of. So not looking back, but... Some of the work I was extremely proud of. I think the biggest win, I'm from Northampton, so Northampton boy, which means in terms of rugby, I'm a Saints fan. And we had, we did all the branding work for the Saints, like shop. So we got to, it was sponsored by Virgin Sport, and we got to do this big, like explosive artwork up in their shop, showing all the rugby players, you know, bursting through concrete walls, which for like a young designer was just great to do, for kind of it inspired me because every time I went into that shop, I was able to see the artwork, which, yeah, that was cool. And then I think probably the next thing, we used to work for Calumet Photographic, which they supply photography equipment, you know, globally, I think. I know definitely across Europe and the US. And we ended up doing so much work on their website that I used to find that it was like the one place I could go to if I wanted to show off what I'd been working on.
Of course, yeah.
I always felt proud that, you know, I could go to the website. The homepage was normally designed by me. And in the end, that turned into be my sole focus at the company I was working at, was to focus on that one client and sort of nurture that and do all their work. So that was one of the biggest wins I think I had.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one because you mentioned a couple of things there that I find are very prevalent at the moment in today's what I would call ever connected world, but very disconnected. And that may sound counterintuitive, but you know, I've been working in recruitment for 14 years, and yes, it was far easier to get hold of people and connect to people when they couldn't see you. You know, as ironic as that is. But that leads me quite nicely onto, you know, part of obviously my podcast is around talking to senior people like yourself to give advice or to provide value to maybe some of the more junior people who are looking to get into the market. You know, so if we're looking at the sort of coaching and mentoring side of it, I'm seeing a lot of people produce information on LinkedIn specifically and other sites around how to get a job, you know, how to become a designer or what you should do if you're a junior designer, because, you know, but there's a lot, right? It probably can be a little bit overwhelming if you're either straight out of college or straight out of university. But, definitely, you know, I'd be keen to get your advice as to, you know, how you think designers in today's world versus when you were, you know, whether it's UX or UI or just design, how they could get ahead, you know, what you know, whether it's a single piece of advice or a couple of tips, because, you know, I think that especially from people that are listening to the show, any knowledge that we can provide is going to be of value to them.
Yeah, definitely. So I think one of the big things is, like, don't worry if you haven't got it all figured out. I'll be completely honest. I do remember a time when I told people that I didn't want to work at all in digital, and now I don't do anything other than work in digital. So,
yeah,
you know, I think you don't really know the careers until the job and what it's going to entail until you start doing it. So if the job doesn't sound 100% right to you, like, try it, see how you feel. Things tend to be different to what we expect them to be.
Always, yeah.
In terms of, like, getting that breakthrough, I think, yeah, to your point, there's so much content out there. Like, try and find a source which you trust and you feel is adding value. Don't just read everything, because there's far too much stuff on the internet these days. You'll get lost. And I think, like, reach out to people, you know, find mentors and ask advice. I've always found that the design industry has always been a very well-connected place, and people are always willing to help. There's lots of great meetups in London and around the globe. And I think that just talking to people and asking for the advice as you go along, it is a great way. And then, again, just putting yourself out there. You know, everyone wants to go and land that big job and start earning the big bucks, but if you can chuck in a couple of freebies and do some volunteer work and just build your knowledge and build your portfolio and your knowledge of being in an actual design environment and a working environment, because things change a lot when you leave college. I think that's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, interesting. And what about, I guess, sort of staying on the same subject, and I'm sort of thinking of this as I go, but how do you review a portfolio? And how do you look at someone's work to decide whether you like it or not? Because, and the reason I ask that is that I'm finding that design specifically is obviously quite subjective.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's a bit like love, right? A beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
You know, so, and all, there's almost nothing that a client can give to me that allows me to see that beauty or that love in the same way that they do.
Yeah.
Now, I can match things exactly the way that they ask, you know, years of experience, job title, industry background. But when you then look at somebody's work, it's, you know, there's a huge gray area. So this again, you know, because you're a senior person, would be a really invaluable piece of advice. So how do you think junior UI UX design candidates should structure their portfolio, or what are you looking for in order for it to jump off the page versus, you know, the other, of which you now know will be hundreds if you put up a job and people want to apply, right? Hundreds.
Yeah, definitely. So
how do you how do they stand out?
To me, I think you've got to show the working out. You know, what got you there? Why did you make those decisions? You know, I don't want to diss dribble or anything like that, but people post these lovely images which mean nothing. You know, they redesign Facebook and they remove all the parts which Facebook's making money from, and they go, look how amazing my design is.
Yeah.
But it's not thought out. Don't get me wrong, it's like visually stunning. Maybe. It's better than, yeah, better than Facebook and better than anything a lot of people could create, but
yes,
it's not been thought out. It doesn't solve a purpose. So for me, what I personally like is when someone's told me the problem they're trying to solve, you know, in the portfolio, it says, this is what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
This is the working out. This is what I discovered. You know, go through the stages, show the discovery, show the research, and then show the piece of work at the end. And even if you don't get to the polished piece of work, but you can show the working out, that to me shows that you know how to work and you understand the steps that are required to get to the solution.
Yes.
I actually think the rest of it, you know, to me it then becomes, if I see that and I've seen the working out and the candidates come in to interview, it's then just being able to talk about your designs and talk about why you're doing it.
Yes.
And again, I think showing that passion, because it's a pretty hard industry to be in at times. You know, you can take a lot of stick, you can get a lot of you can get put down a bit being a designer, and things are, when other members of the organization think they know better, it can get frustrating. So
yes,
you've got to have passion to keep going. So when you get to the face-to-face stage, just bring that passion with you and be able to talk about your designs and why you did it and what you were trying to achieve.
Yeah, and I think that's a very valid point, because one thing I'm seeing at the moment is there's this evolution from you sort of UI design to product design, or the word product is becoming more and more prevalent. And what you just mentioned there for me has quite a lot of connotations, because there's a very big difference between something that is artistically beautiful,
yeah,
and something which is a piece of art, and then something that is solves a problem because it actually functionally works and it looks good as well. And I think that before digital, because, you know, I mean, my brother's a graphic designer, you come from design. I know a lot of people who start in the traditional way, and nearly all of them started with print. And the beauty of print is it needs to just look pretty, because there's no ROI on it.
There's no measurements, yeah.
Yeah, you can't track whether it was, if you produce 10,000 flyers, unless everybody that comes to your event brings a flyer to say, I came because I had a flyer, then you don't really know why 300 people came to your event, or 1,000 or whatever. They, you know, it's only with the evolution and the development and launch of the way the internet is now run that allows you to say, if I put something on it, I can actually physically track what the experience of that is.
Yeah, and that's it. And the amount of tools now we've got to track people, you know, how they got to you, where they came from, what they're doing when they're there.
Yes.
I mean, even down to, obviously you can't do this unless you're in a lab, but even down to tracking eye software when, you know, someone's reading a page to see what they're looking at. But I think that's exactly it. We're just becoming so analytical now. And I gave a talk on this back in January. But to me, that's another area of importance, is understanding. You want to be a designer, but you need to understand the data a little bit.
Yes.
Because that's coming into more and more conversations now. More and more people are presenting data and asking you to fix X problem that they've seen with the data.
Yes.
Which is why, like I said in the beginning, you know, I work with analysts now. We are reviewing constantly different metrics and different platforms we have, which track users and understand what they're doing.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen there's a change over the last few years of where UI and UX could have easily been perceived at the beginning as just designing stuff online.
Yeah.
Now it has much more of an R&D element to it.
Because we
physically have the data now that we didn't have before, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
Or companies research. Are investing in it more, as it were.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, companies are seeing the value now. I think for designers, we've started to get a couple of wins. You know, there's big companies which have been built on design, design thinking, and that's helping us sell it internally. And the value, you know, people always say, oh, how do designers get a seat at the table? And for me, it's going back to, it's the same thing I mentioned to Advice for Junior. It's presenting the plan, what problem you're trying to solve, and how are you going to get there? And, you know, that's how you start speaking to the VPs and you know, the directors of the companies.
Yeah, and that actually, to be fair, is perfect timing, and I don't think you planned this, but that leads me naturally onto, you know, I'd like to have a conversation a little bit about the sort of wider industry. When I mean industry, I mean design, but then specifically how the sort of marketing and communications functions may need to adapt going forward to accommodate the design that's happening all around them. And also, you know, I've done this job for over 10 years now, and I've recruited a lot of commercial roles, sales and marketing. And what you just said there is exactly the reason why those businesses are very important in any company, because they're all based around, you know, marketing qualified leads, sales qualified leads. It's all based around research in order to launch into a new space or make a change to a business model. So what do you think? You mentioned something there about design and how they can present their theory around to get a seat at the table, as it were. But do you think, I mean, this kind of has two questions. Do you think it has an impact on the wider marketing communications functions? And if you do, you know, what do you think they may need to do, or how would they link together? Because it is close to that area.
Yeah, no, you also set me up perfectly. I don't think you meant to.
No. Couldn't have scripted it better.
yeah. So prime example for that is, you know, user experience and research, especially. I think now, going back to your point of being more R&D focused, I think we're being looked at as the people that can collate that information and understand what it is the market wants. So in terms of expanding globally, like I was brought on in the beginning of my days at RingCentral, knowing that we were going to expand into Europe, and knowing that it was going to be my role to plan the expansion in terms of web presence, you know, e-commerce focus, even to the point of collateral, what collateral was needed, you know, what was the MVP of us launching, you know, I say a brand, but launching RingCentral in additional countries. For that was the sync up of me having the design experience and having, you know, thinking of this from a design perspective, but having to work in a very sort of marketing led function. So we were doing it for marketing purposes, but I was bringing my knowledge. So for the point of having seats at a table, that was knowing how to address the question, and backing it up with processes that I, you know, but thought through, gone through, understood what the market wanted, understood what they needed, and just tied the whole thing together. So really, for me, I think the marketing and design functions will start working closer together. I think designers will be involved a lot earlier on. And I think designers will start becoming the people that actually decide what's needed versus being told by the marketing organization, we need X. I think it will be designer says we need X, and marketing then decide how to, you know, brand or term that or whatever they need to do.
Yes.
I think design will definitely become a much bigger function in a lot of these businesses.
Yeah, because, you know, historically communications was really about how a company put out their PR message, you know, whether that's corporate social responsibility or whether that's press release or whether that's TV or above the line or below the line or whatever it may be. And then traditional marketing was really sort of brand or product and what it stood for. But I don't know. From now, and a lot of people I've had on the show were having the same conversations about, well, actually, people spend much more time looking at things online now. So the online message should be really be your first priority in terms of communication message. Therefore, there's an argument that communications should sit within that function or the other way around, or you should sit within the communications function, because if you're thinking about solving a user experience or a customer experience, then the first question, you know, as Gary V always says, is, you know, how do I get their attention?
Yeah. Because
if I don't have their attention, then I don't have, I'm not going to make it, nothing else will follow.
Yeah.
And then how long do I have their attention for? You know, and if you read some of the stats around how long people are online for, you know, I think 18 to 24 year olds is something like 4 hours a day they spend online, yeah, or 4 or 5 hours a day online, of which 45 minutes or an hour is Facebook, for example. Yeah. You know, frightening. But then that, for me, is constant digital communication. And yeah, therefore, whether you know it or not, subliminally, that's an experience. Whether, yeah, whether you're reading it or not, actually, because you're just consuming the content because it's just in front of you.
Yeah, so I think there's two things there. One, I always think that any interaction is, it's an experience, like you say. So yes, if they're interacting with anything that's been created, it's going to affect the experience, and it's going to affect their feelings and thoughts on the brand as a whole.
Yes.
And secondly, the other thing which I found quite shocking, but one thing which I've definitely been able to add value in terms of marketing, is mapping out user journeys. That's a bread and butter of a UXer, you know, thinking about the user journey. But it's funny that it's not done very often in marketing organizations. So right, take that crossover skill and thinking, okay, you want to display an advert here on Facebook, and then they're going to come to here and then do X. Then they're going to download our product, and tying the whole thing in and journey mapping has definitely added value for me, or I've added value into the marketing org from taking that skill.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was actually going to ask earlier, is there a set methodology around user experience, like an industry-wide set way of doing it? You know, bit like when you do a brand, you know, you do the strategy, you do the guidelines, you do the feelings, you do the person, you build people and, you know, stuff like that. You know, is there something like that within the UX and UI community? Because I know there's lots of tech and there's lots of process, but is there a, would you say that in your experience, there's an industry methodology?
So I'm going to say no, and everyone's going to come back and say there is.
They
definitely use lots of methodologies, you know, human-centered design and certain, you know, design thinking, like the double diamond effect and all these different sort of methodologies which people use. But I don't think there's a set one, because personally, I think everybody works differently. And again, going back to, I'm sounding a bit like a broken record, but if you know what you're working towards and you know what the solution is, like you can iterate on the plans and iterate on the standard ways of working. The end goal is to get to X, then personally, I think there's multiple ways to get there and you shouldn't get stuck in the same way.
Okay, yeah, good to know. And what's your view on technology at the moment? Do you think there's any that are kind of come out in 2019 that are really going to disrupt the space, or has that already happened? What's your view?
I think it's happened, but I think that it's constantly happening. The more technology we create, the more, you know, it's going to advance, and the more advancements we're going to see. I think, you know, going back to the sort of connected home front, I think that a lot of people these days are focusing on designs which are going to interact with voice and they're going to interact with an entire ecosystem of a home. So there's a lot of scope there. And I don't think we're there yet in terms of technology, but as we grow, that's going to be a big function. And, you know, you'll start getting companies standing up purely voice design departments, which actually is quite funny, because one thing I find interesting being at RingCentral is voice design has been a big thing for years. You know, old contact centers have designers that plan out how you're going to interact. You know, you think of phoning your bank and having a robot ask you a couple of questions and you go down a certain path.
Yes.
These designers have been around for years. So when people are researching voice design, my advice would be look at old telecoms designers and look at people who have designed for IVRs, because that's like they've been doing this for 15 years already. They've got a massive head start on us. And then, yeah, other technologies. I think that just like the way we're designing, the speed of what we're designing at now, these Envision apps and whatever else that's coming out. Like I personally am a huge fan of Adobe XD. I know that everyone's migrated over to Sketch. I think like we're designing quicker, we're coming up with prototypes quicker, and that's kind of making us, it's definitely making us more agile, but it's kind of meaning that we can work on a lot more and get a lot more out. So I think as the years progress, these apps are just going to get quicker and quicker. And I can almost see there being more of these quick-to-market prototyping apps, which kind of integrate with the user testing front even further. So, you know, you're getting feedback quickly, you're prototyping quickly. Everything's about speed, isn't it? You know, the quicker you can get feedback, the quicker you can change it to something that works.
That's
what I'm expecting.
And are you guys using an agile process or a sprint process in your current working where you are now?
So we run sprints, but we also work agile. So we run sprints for bigger problems and then work agile for smaller, you know, quick fixes. So we'll kind of have a constant backlog, which goes into sprint. But then if something needs to be pulled out, we'll have a separate team which will work on it as an agile methodology.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking to a lot of people all the time, and some are evolving towards that, and some are not, and it's always good to hear how companies are evolving in order to get the work delivered as fast as possible, but maintain the standards.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge. I think you've got to. For me, it's always a case of understanding what the impact would be if it went wrong, and kind of, you know, doing the risk reward kind of scales and seeing is it really worth pushing it down an agile path and not going through all the steps required, or are we risking too much? And that's kind of the point where we'll make a decision and see how we feel and see if it's worth doing or not.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. And look, I mean, for me, you've obviously evolved from like different mediums, you know, I mean, print, digital, UX, obviously leadership. And obviously now, by the sounds of things, have covered design and UX and sort of new areas around conversion rate optimization. But what's your view on how UX and UI should work together? And or do you see them as just one in the same thing, but just, you know, two heads of the same, you know, the same dragon, if you like, or the same person? Because I'm talking to candidates and clients a lot about this, and I'm finding more and more that they're finding it harder and harder to separate, because nearly everybody I talk to says they do both.
Yeah, I think nearly everybody I talk to says the same thing. It's definitely, I often, when I talk to people, will often ask which is their strength out of the two, just to get an interest, just to see which they feel they're stronger at.
Yes.
But like, they do work together. People do, they do go through those steps, you know, talking to a customer in the beginning, or talking to a, you know, researching a product and what you're going to do. And then while you're doing that, you're already ideating on how you're going to, you know, what the UI is going to look like and how you're going to do this and how you're going to design X and whatever. So I think they do work well together. What I've noticed is, I think what will happen is you'll get more specialized UX researchers and more specialized UX designers, and then, you know, more specialized UI designers. And in terms of like what people want to focus on, that's where, you know, if you were to point your career and say, I'm going to focus on research and I'm going to be the best researcher possible, like, you've got more chance of doing that if that's what you focus on.
Yes.
If that's the interest you, but you're focusing on UI, then, you know, you kind of spend a lot of time focusing on the area that you don't want to.
For sure.
I feel like there's jobs out there for people who are looking to do everything, can be a bit of a jack of all trades, and there's jobs out there for people who want to just focus on one area. But again, you know, they do work together. Collaboration is definitely needed. And I would say that if you're working on a project and there's a researcher and then there's a UI designer, you've got to make sure there's a good gap over in the middle where you're both collaborating on like the middle ground. So the researcher's done the research and they're starting to come up with the ideas and ideate on what they think's required. Bring in the UI designer to start, you know, assessing it as well and thinking more of like the interactions and how things are going to function. That's like how I work, and that's how I think I've always worked, to be honest with you. Just be as open as possible and share as much as possible.
Yeah, because it's a funny one, because you don't normally see, or I don't normally see, and you just mentioned it there. If you had somebody who's got a strong research background, then naturally they would need a design element to complement that. it's very rare you see someone who's got a really strong design background that are not, that knows how to do all of the research part.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, and this is why I see a lot of people say UX, UI, UX, UI, I can do both, because, you know, a client will say, well, I only want to hire one person. I don't want to split it out. So I need someone who can, you know, sort of conceptualize or evangelize multiple areas, but they don't have the research bit. So that could be totally separate. So I think the architecture bit is separate. The research bit is separate. A bit like in marketing, brand is very separate from, you know, place or promotion or product or anything like that, because it's a real niche area. And same with this. I'm always imploring candidates to pick the bit that you love, not worry about how you're going to get the job. The job will come naturally when you're an expert in something. If you continue to try to promote to not be an expert, then you're one of every other thousands and thousands of generalists out there who are trying to get the same job, you know. And I see this,
being a niche, you know, focusing on one thing isn't a bad thing.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And especially now with the market being more developed, you know, actually some of the clients that I've spoken to or I'm working with at the moment are looking for that. They don't want one person to do three things. You know, they want either a lead visual designer with 12, 14 years, 15 years senior person doing design, you know, where they love that part of the job, visual side of the job. And it will integrate with UX naturally, but they have a lead UX and then they have UX research and UX architecture. And then they have, you know, junior and middleweight designers as well. But they, because they're so big, they really need the strong individual in each to lead both those areas. And then unfortunately it makes it really hard to find that person, because a lot of people are doing the generalist bit or trying to do both.
Yeah. And I think if you're doing the generalist bit because you're not sure where you want to focus, then that's okay. Like, you know, keep trying and seeing, but
yes,
if you're doing it because you think that's what's required, then my advice is it shouldn't be like focus on the one area. If you can turn your hand to two things, then back to like your point of, the company might want that because they're trying to get two heads for the price of one. But there are companies out there which are going to focus on these separate functions and, you know, hire individuals who are extremely specialist and extremely good at what they do.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, I'd be interested to know your point of view on how clients are interviewing design candidates. You know, what's been your experience and what's your view on, you know, how you guys are doing it either at RingCentral or just be what your sort of point of view on how they're actually, how, you know, when someone comes, how do they stand out? I know we sort of touched on it earlier, but, you know, I'd be keen to get it from your point of view.
Yeah. I think these days the most common thing, you know, everyone's asking for is design challenges. Personally, I don't really agree with them. And it's not that
test.
Yeah, it's a test, but problem is it's a go home and do this challenge for me,
okay. And
take a week doing it, and I don't care if you've got a social life and you've got other things going on. You know, I get it, I understand the principle and why they're asking talent to do that, but what I've done in the past and what I've had done to me, which is where I stole it from, is I've been asked to do it on the spot. Wow, which sounds terrifying. It sounds terrifying, but it's not, because the way you do it is you go, right, we're going to work together. We're going to be close. You know, we're going to collaborate. We're going to need to know how each of us thinks and how we work. So let's come in. Let's sit in an office. Let's put up one small problem we've got to solve. And together, let's collaborate for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it takes.
Yes.
And just get some rough ideas. And when you go through that process for interviewing, you just see how someone ticks. You see what they're thinking, how they think, you know, how they're solving the problems on the fly. And personally, like, I find when I'm doing that, you know, you might be nervous in an interview, but when you're doing that, you're not nervous, because it's what you do, it's what you know.
Yeah, and you should be just, what you know, right?
Yeah, you just become yourself. You just act normal and you start working through a problem without even thinking about it. And, you know, these are small little challenges. Whereas when you get a task, what I've always done in my past is when I've been given these tasks to go home and try, I'll be completely honest. They've said, oh, yeah, you've got 7 days. And I've had like sleepless nights because I think to myself, well, I'll be the guy who puts in the most amount of work.
Yeah. You never know what's right, do you? You never know. It's a bit like homework.
Yeah, you just like, yeah, exactly that. You don't know what they want. You don't know what they're expecting. So I'll go, right, well, if I do, instead of doing the 8 hours they're advising me to do, I'm going to do 32 just to make sure.
Overachieve, yeah.
Yeah.
Get the overachievement back.
Yeah, you did too much.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. No, that's very true, actually. And I think depending on how people react to that situation, I think really depends on the preparation they've had from their consultant like me or their trusted advisor. And I think that's where the industry, my industry that I've been in for a long time, it is lacking in some areas because it requires a lot of time and effort to prepare somebody for what they need to be or how or what's going to be expected of them when they go for just a half an hour interview. But the key bit is that if they can't perform for half an hour or an hour in an environment where someone says, let's do a collaboration, then why would it be any different when they've got the job? What, just because they're safe, they feel more knowledge and safer that they've got the job already so that they could be different?
Yeah, that's
you can behave in a different way. You shouldn't be like that. And I don't know, the other challenge we're facing is a bit like on the technical side for recruitment, it's impossible to know another way of testing. Because when someone says they're a designer and you look at their portfolio and you like it, it doesn't really mean that that's going to equate to the performance that you want when they come on board. So unlike sales, where you know you can reference somebody for their last four jobs and how they performed against target, and you get a good pattern, you know. And same in finance, where have you saved the company money, or logistics, what operational work have you put down that made our business better, you know. And again, it comes back to what we talked about earlier about design, you know, about love and art. You know, it's very subjective.
Yeah.
Very, you know, especially if people haven't developed the methodology or developed the skill of the methodology, so that actually as soon as I sit with this person, doesn't matter whether it's in an interview or not, if he says to me, let's collaborate, I already know my first five questions.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just thinking through the process.
Yeah. And then like I said earlier, there must be a methodology around design principles or whatever there is. And someone who's not learnt them or someone who doesn't use them by habit will naturally fail in that environment, unfortunately. Even if they're the brilliant designer, they just won't be able to cope with that being in that environment.
You're going to expect certain things to come first. And that's the thing. If you sit down with someone and they start sketching out this amazing, you know, really nice hand-drawn like experience, and instead of asking questions, then you're going to think, well, this guy doesn't know what they're doing. You're going to know straight away.
Sure.
And I think the other big thing for me is just like you want to work with people you want to work with. You know, if you need to feel something, you need to have the same thought process, and you've got to look at problems the same and have the same kind of aspirations in a sense. What I find is some people come in and when you ask the big question of where do you see yourself in 10 years or 5 years, and they look at you blank, you kind of think, well, like, give me something.
Yeah. I don't need chapter and verse, but I'd at least like to know that you thought about what you want to do, even if it's just ideas that prompt more conversation.
Yeah. Do you want to be a banker or?
You're sitting here applying for a design job and you're not sure what you want to do in design. It's a little bit like, I understand that at the graduate level and the first couple of years, where actually what you should be saying is, I want to get as much experience in as many different areas as possible over the next 3 years so that I end up deciding what I want to be. That would be like the perfect answer.
Exactly. Yeah,
when you're older, for you, at your level, it's more about, well, does this fulfill what I'm looking to create and or implement based on my, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years of experience of doing the same or similar job?
And design has changed, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Amazing. Look, I want to probably finish with just something around advice for, I guess, the sort of younger generation. And that's been quite a big subject for us today. But this is really to find out what your biggest learning, you know, what's been your biggest, I guess, biggest learning over your career. You know, has there been a single, you know, sort of overarching defining learn that you've had, or maybe a couple that you could tell us that would end up helping younger people to maybe either not maybe make the same mistake, but or guide them on their direction in terms of, you know, what would help them get to where they want to go?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have like one sort of overarching one, which kind of ties into, kind of has different points, but I think thinking back on myself when I was younger, the thing I did a lot of was hide away in a room and design and not show anyone my work, and was really nervous to get feedback, and
yes,
you know, would try and perfect something before showing it to my manager. And I think we do that naturally because we're worried that what we're doing is wrong, or we're worried we're going to get judged. So kind of that area, you know, I think you need to learn to take criticism and understand that, you know, it's not going to be aimed at you. It's not always negative.
Yeah.
And also just share early. Like, the earlier you start sharing your designs and your thought process, the more chance you've got of someone coming in and giving you feedback, and actually, you know, the feedback shaping design quickly to become something great. Whereas if you go down a rabbit hole which is incorrect, you can waste a lot of time and, you know, a lot of effort. And then that's when it hurts more. You know, the longer you put into something and pine over a design and hold off sharing it, when you do share it, and if it's wrong, it hurts more.
Yeah.
So that's probably like the biggest thing is just, yeah, don't be afraid of giving feedback. And then you kind of want to start looking at how to get feedback and how to take that, and understanding from yourself when someone's giving you feedback, like, take it on board, but start evaluating when you should push back. And, you know, if someone is telling you need to put a button here and it needs to be blue, if there's no reason for it, then push back. Like, start fighting for your design.
Yes.
As long as you've got reason to back it up. So,
yeah
I think feedback's a really hard one. A lot of people take it really personally.
Yes.
With people in the past, and, you know, any bit of advice you give them has come with an argument.
I know. And it's almost like not being able to separate work from friendship.
Yeah.
Because I find that people take feedback as if you've known them personally, so you're having a go at them, and then it's much harder to take versus, let's say we're employees together, or I'm trying to be an employee of yours, and all you're doing is giving me your view on what you see in front of you about me. And I don't know you, so I'm well within my rights to say what I want based on what you've shown me.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, and but the human element gets in the way.
It does, definitely.
And the thing about today is that there's never been a better time, probably, to be in design, because the ability for people to see it has never been so good.
Oh, it's huge, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, before, and I think the other thing you mentioned there's really important, and I think it comes back to, it's actually a really good place to finish as well, it comes back to being the difference between being an artist and being, you know, in UX and UI design. Because an artist typically, you know, so for example, I watched a really interesting post yesterday on LinkedIn about Picasso and how he created, you know, over 50,000 works of art in his life.
Yeah,
and the message was about resilience and persistence and tenacity and overcoming adversity, because people only see the pictures that are priceless, but they don't know what he did in order to produce all the others. But he could have easily not shown anyone, because artists typically, and like musicians, you know, are a little bit like, well, I don't want to show anybody till it's finished.
Yeah, hide it away.
Yeah. Whereas actually in UX, you know, user experience or, you know, visual design, the quicker you have interaction with your work, the faster it can be adapted to become a real life product or a real life solution to a problem. And that is,
do it that quickly now, you know, that's it. Get it out there, get feedback, talk to your people you trust. I always like, silly bit of advice, but don't go to one person, go to two, you know.
Yeah, always. And now you can get to as many as you like, right? With platforms like LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, you know, like the ability to do things and share, you know.
Oh, it's huge now, yeah. You can get out audience so quickly.
But the challenge, the other side, the flip side of that is it does present a bit of a unique problem, and that is that if people start to criticize your work or give you advice and you don't take it very well, you'll stop doing it because you don't like what people say, rather than looking at it and going, this is not personal, I put it out there, I asked for someone's opinion, they gave it to me, and then now I should do that, I should keep going more and more and more, you know, to get it right.
Yeah, everyone's gonna have an opinion. They're not all going to be right, but there may be some snippets in there.
Yeah, no,
that's
amazing.
The way to think of it.
Look, been really, really interesting to have you on the show. Thank you very much for spending sort of 45 minutes with us today. Obviously, I'll let you know when it goes out. Anybody that's got any questions for us, there's a voice message that's on my app, and obviously they'll be able to link up with us through our social panels if they've got any comments. But Sam, really, really appreciate you being on the show today, and obviously I'm going to let you go now and have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
No worries. Bye for now.
Bye.